This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Wolf paused as he reached the center of the intersection. He was silhouetted by the moonlight, eyes gold and green and black and seething. She saw him drag his tongue across his fangs, watched as he curled and uncurled his fingers. His jaw worked as if to take in a bigger gulp of air. She could see his fight, his struggle, as clearly as she could see the animal, the wolf, in him, as clearly as she could still see the man. Wolf. Her tongue was parched. She tried to wet her dry lips and tasted blood. What have they done to you? You, the word was spat out at her, full of hatred. What have you done to me? He took another stumbling step toward her, and she scooted away, pushing at the ground with the heels of her shoes. But it was useless. In the blink of an eye, he had crouched down over her, knocking her onto her elbows without even having to touch her. His hands hit the ground on either side of her head. Scarlet gaped up at eyes that now seemed to glow in the dark. His mouth was ruby red, the front of his shirt black from the gore. She could smell blood on him, on his clothes, his hair, his skin. If it was this pungent to her, she couldn't imagine how it must overwhelm him. He growled and lowered his nose to her neck, sniffing. I know you don't want to hurt me, Wolf. His nose bumped against her jaw. His breath caressed her collarbone. You helped me. You rescued me. A steaming tear escaped down her cheek. The tips of his hair, wild and messy again, brushed against her lips. Things have changed. Her heart fluttered like a firefly with a missing wing. Her pulse pounded through her veins, expecting the clamp of jaws on her throat at any moment. But something was holding him back. He could have killed her already, but he hadn't. She gulped. You protected me from Ram. It wasn't so you could kill me now. You don't know the thoughts going through my head. I know you're different from them. She attached her gaze to the enormous moon over the skyline, reminded herself that this was not a monster. This was Wolf, the man who had held her so tenderly on the train, the man who had given her the ID chip to help her escape. You said you never wanted to scare me. Well, you're scaring me. A growl vibrated against her. Scarlet shivered, but forced her body not to shrink away. Instead, she gulped and brought her hands up to his face. Stroking her thumbs over his cheeks, she placed a kiss against Wolf's temple. His body tensed, and she was able to angle his head back just far enough that she could see his eyes. His lips curled into a snarl, but she held his gaze. Stop this, Wolf. You're not one of them anymore. His brow twitched, but his resentment seemed to fade. His expression held pain and desperation and mute anger, but not at her. He's in my head, he said, his voice a rumbling growl. Scarlet, I can't. He looked away, face scrunching. Scarlet traced her fingers along his face. The same jaw, the same cheekbones, the same scars, all splattered with blood. She brushed her fingers through his wild hair. Just stay with me. Protect me, like you said you would. Something whooshed by her ear and thudded into Wolf's neck. Wolf went rigid. He looked up, eyes wide, and already brightening with bloodlust. But then they grew bleary. With a strangled gurgle in his throat, the strength left him, and he collapsed on top of her. Chapter 41 Wolf! Wolf! Craning her neck, Scarlet saw a man and a woman sprinting toward her, the moonlight glinting off the woman's gun. Scarlet's terror was short-lived. They weren't crazed Lunars. She returned her attention to Wolf, searching out the dart embedded in his neck. Wolf! She yelled again, prying the dart out of his flesh and dropping it to the ground. Are you all right? The woman yelled as she got closer. Scarlet ignored her until her own name cut through her panic. Scarlet! Scarlet Benoit? She glanced up again as the woman slowed. But no, not a woman. A girl with messy hair and fine, vaguely familiar features. Scarlet frowned, sure she had seen the girl before. The man caught up, gasping for air. Who are you? She asked. locking her arms around Wolf as the two stooped to pull him away from her. "What did you do to him?" "Come on," said the man, grabbing Wolf. He tried to pry Wolf away, but she held tight. "We have to get out of here." "Stop it! Don't touch him! Wolf!" She gripped the sides of Wolf's face and tilted him back. If it hadn't been for his fangs and the blood on his jaw, he would have looked peaceful. "What did you do to him?"
"Scarlet, where's your grandmother? Is she with you?" said the girl.
This brought Scarlet's scattered attention back to her.
"My grandmother?"
The girl knelt beside her.
"Michelle Benoit? Do you know where she is?"
The girl's words tripped over themselves in her rush to speak. Scarlet blinked. Her memory shifted. She did know this girl. Light bounced off the girl's fingers, and Scarlet realized what she had seen before wasn't a gun. It was her hand.
"Lynn Cinder," she whispered.
"Don't worry," said the man. "We're the good guys."
"Scarlet,"
said Cinder, grasping Wolf by the shoulder to leverage some of the weight away from her. "I know how it looked on the net screens, but I swear we're not here to hurt you. I just need to know where your grandmother is. Is she in danger?"
Scarlet gulped.
This was Princess Selene. This was the girl they'd been searching for. The girl her grandmother had been questioned over. The girl her grandmother had given everything to protect. Together, she and the man heaved Wolf away, dropping him onto the concrete.
"Please," said Cinder.
"Your grandmother?"
"She's in the opera house," Scarlet said.
"She's dead." The girl gaped at her with pity or disappointment. Scarlet couldn't tell which. Sitting up, she flattened her palm against Wolf's chest, relieved to feel it rise beneath her touch. "They were looking for you." Surprise quickly stole away the girl's sympathy.
"Come on," said the man from behind her, stooping and hooking his elbow beneath Scarlet's armpit.
"Time to go."
"No, I'm not leaving him."
She scrambled out of his hold and crawled towards Wolf's unconscious body, tying her arms around his head. The strangers gawked at her like she was mad.
"He's not like the rest."
"He's exactly like the rest," said the man. "He was trying to eat you."
"He saved my life."
The strangers exchanged disbelieving glances, and the girl gave a baffled shrug.
"Fine," the man said. "You take the helm."
He pulled Scarlet off Wolf while the girl grabbed Wolf's wrist and hoisted him up over her shoulder, grunting with effort. The man skirted behind and grabbed Wolf's leg.
"Holy spades," he muttered, already breathless. "What are these guys made of?"
Cinder started moving toward the opera house at a pace only barely slower than a jaunt. Scarlet ducked in between them, supporting Wolf's abdomen as well as she could as they awkwardly stumbled across the square. Past the woman, the gleaming form of a military cargo ship poked out from the next street. A howl nearly startled Scarlet into dropping Wolf's body. She could not imagine feeling more vulnerable, her arms wrapped around Wolf's torso, leaving her stomach and chest exposed, moving at the snail's pace, sweating, exhausted, in pain, blood oozing down her side.
"You better have those tranquilizers ready," the man said. "I can only put in one at a time."
The man cursed beneath his breath. He gasped.
"Cinder, 10 o'clock.
There was a snap, and a dodge lodged itself into a man's chest on the sidewalk in front of the theater. He had crumpled to the ground before Scarlet even realized he was there.
"Let's pick it up," the man behind her said. "How many more of those do you have?"
"Just 3, the girl panted.
"Gonna have to restock."
"Right. I'll just head down to the convenience store and..." She didn't finish, the strain too much. Cinder tripped and they all stumbled, Wolf's body landing on the ground with a thud. Scarlet pulled out from beneath him, and her heart lurched to see blood gushing out of his wounds, made worse from the trek.
"Wolf!"
An eerie howling rose up all around them, much closer than it had seemed before.
"Open the ramp!"
the girl yelled, startling the man.
"We need bandages," said Scarlet.
The girl got to her feet and grasped Wolf's wrists again. "There are bandages on the ship. Come on!" The man ran ahead, screaming,
"Eco! Open the hatch!"
Scarlet heard the clicking of gears and the humming of electricity as the hatch began to open, revealing the welcoming interior of the ship. Pulling herself onto her feet, she just grabbed Wolf's ankles when she saw a man loping toward them at a sprint, his nostrils flaring, lips pulled taut against his fangs. He was one of the men who had first taken her to her cell. A ping, a thunk, as a dart buried itself in his forearm. He roared and increased his speed for 2 steps before his anger faded and he fell forward, face slamming onto the pavement.
"Almost there," said Cinder through her teeth, picking up Wolf's dropped wrists.
More howling greeted them from the roads and alleys and shadows, great loping figures appearing out of the darkness. Scarlet's back and legs ached, and her palms were slick as she struggled to retain her grip on Wolf's ankles.
"They're coming! I noticed!"
Scarlet fell, crashing onto her knees. She looked up at Wolf's unconscious face, at the panicking girl, and frustration welled up inside her. She forced herself to stand again, though her legs were no stronger than unbaked dough. Then the man was back, shoving her toward the ship.
"Go!"
he yelled, and grabs Wolf's ankles.
"Thorn, you're supposed to be flying the ship, you dunce!"
Scarlet turned toward the ship's open hatch.
"I can fly. Just get him inside."
She ran, though her mind screamed at her for leaving Wolf behind. Her muscles burned. Her head pounded with the rush of blood. She could only focus on putting one foot in front of another, ignoring the burning, ignoring the sharp, stabbing pain in her side, blinking away the sweat. One more step. Something sliced across her back. She heard the rip of fabric, a loud thump, and then something grabbed her ankle. She screamed and collapsed at the bottom of the ramp. Fingernails buried themselves into the flesh of her calf, and she cried out in pain. Whistle, thud, the hand released her. Scarlet kicked the man in the jaw before scrambling up the rest of the ramp into the gaping hull of the ship. She flew into the cockpit and stumbled into the pilot's seat. They hadn't bothered to stop the engines, and the ship rumbled and purred around her. Her motions were automatic. She could barely see for the salty sting of sweat in her eyes. Her heartbeat felt like horses' hooves trampling her chest, but her fingers knew what to do as they breezed over the panel.
"Captain? Cinder?"
Startled, she spun back toward the door, but there was no one there. "Who's there?" A momentary silence. Then, "Who are you?" Scarlet swiped the sweat from her forehead. The ship was talking to her.
"I'm Scarlet. We need to get ready for takeoff. Can you—" "Where are Thorn and Cinder?"
"Right behind me. Is this ship equipped with autolift?" A series of lights lit up on the panel. "Autolift and automagnetic stabilizers."
"Good."
She reached for the thruster output control and waited to hear the sound of footsteps on the ramp. A drop of sweat slid down her temple. She gulped, harshly filling in her attempt to wet her sandpaper throat.
"What's taking them so long?"
Swiveling the chair around, she threw herself toward the cockpit entrance and peered past the cargo bay. Wolf's prone body was laid out not a dozen steps from the end of the ramp, and there were Lynn Cinder and her friend standing back to back. They were surrounded by 7 lunar operatives and the Thaumaturge. Chapter 42. Cinder sensed the Thaumaturge before she saw him, like a snake slithering into her brain, urging her to stop running, to stand still and be captured. Her right leg obeyed, her left kept going. With a yelp, she crashed to her hands and knees. The unconscious man, Wolf, nearly crushed her before his body rolled away. Thorn cried out and tripped, barely able to catch himself before falling. Cinder jumped back to her feet and spun around. The men came out of the shadows, from the alleyways, around corners, from behind the ship, each with their glowing eyes and sharp canines bared, 7 in all. She spotted the Thaumaturge, handsome as they always were, with curly black hair and a chiseled face. He wore a red coat, a 2nd-level Thaumaturge. Backing away, she collided with Thorn.
"So," he murmured, "how many more darts do you have?"
the thaumaturge's dark irises sparkled with moonlight. One, she doubted the thaumaturge could have heard her, but he smiled serenely and tucked his hands into his maroon sleeves.
Right, said Thorn. In that case, he snatched the officer's stolen gun from his belt and spun, aiming for the thaumaturge, then froze.
Oh, no.
From the corner of her eye, Cinder saw Thorn's arm curl back, change direction until the barrel was aimed at her temple instead.
Cinder!
His voice nearly broke from panic. The thaumaturge's expression remained complacent. Cinder held her breath, steeling her nerves, and targeted her last tranquilizer at Thorn's leg. The thunk made her cringe, but within seconds the gun had clattered from Thorn's fingers and his body collapsed motionless on top of Wolf's. A warm laugh spilled out of the thaumaturge.
"Hello, Miss Lynn. How pleasant to make your acquaintance."
She swooped her gaze over the seven men. They were all threatening, hungry, ready to pounce on her and tear her limb from limb at the slightest provocation. Somehow she preferred that to the thaumaturge's gleeful amusement. At least with these men, there was no misinterpreting their intentions. She'd taken three steps forward before she realized it. She braced herself and strained to keep her feet still, wobbling for a moment before finding balance and standing solid on the pavement at the same time that her bionics picked up on the intrusion, bioelectrical manipulation detected, initializing resistance procedures. The text vanished as Cinder regained purchase of her own thoughts, her own body. Her brain was being stretched in two directions as the thaumaturge failed to control her, her own lunar gift fighting against him.
"So it's true," he said.
The pressure released, her ears popped, and she was back in her own head again. She was panting, feeling like she'd just run across the whole continent.
"You'll forgive me. I did have to try."
His white teeth glinted. He didn't seem at all put off by the fact that she couldn't be controlled as easily as Thorn had been, as easily as the seven men surrounding her. Heart skipping, she glanced at the nearest man, one with shaggy blonde hair and a scar that ran from temple to jaw. She forced herself to be calm, urged the desperation to subside, and reached her thoughts toward him. His mind wasn't like any of those she touched with her lunar gift yet. Not open and focused like Thorn's, not cold and determined like Alack's, not petrified like Emily's, not anxious or proud like the military officers. This man had the mind of an animal, scattered and wild and raging with primal instinct, the desire to kill, the need to feast, the constant awareness of where he stood in the pack and how he could improve his station. Kill, eat, destroyed. With a shudder, she pulled her thoughts away from him. The thaumaturge was chuckling again.
"What do you think of my pets?
How easily they fit in with the humans, but how quickly they turn into beasts."
"You're controlling them," she said, finding her voice.
"You flatter me. I'm only encouraging their natural instincts."
"No, no person, not even animals, have instincts like this. To hunt and or defend, maybe. But you've turned them into monsters."
"Perhaps there were some genetic modifications involved." He finished the statement with another chuckle, like she'd caught him in a guilty pleasure.
"But don't worry, Miss Lynn. I won't let them hurt you. I want my queen to have that pleasure.
Your friends, unfortunately." In unison, two of the soldiers stepped forward and grasped Cinder by the elbows.
"Take her to the theater," said the thaumaturge. "I will inform Her Majesty that Michel Benoit turned out to be useful for something after all."
But Cinder's captors hadn't taken her two steps when the roar of an engine rattled the pavement. They hesitated, and Cinder glanced back as the rampion started to rise, hovering chest height above the street. The ramp was still down, and Cinder could see the metal vibrating, the storage crates rattling against one another.
"Cinder!"
Eco's voice cut through her thundering pulse.
"Get down!" She sank to her knees, hanging limp between the two soldiers, as the ship surged forward. The lowered platform collided with the two men. They dropped Cinder onto all fours, and she glanced up as the ramp cut through the rest of the soldiers, mowing down all but one who had the sense to dodge out of its way before the ramp smashed into the thaumaturge. He gasped, his legs dangling as he clung to the edge. Staying low as the belly of the ship hovered overhead, Cinder spun around and scrambled for Thorn's dropped pistol. She waited until she was sure she had a clear shot before firing. The bullet lodged itself in the thaumaturge's thigh, and he screamed, releasing the ramp and dropping onto the pavement. His calmness was gone, his face contorted with rage. The blonde soldier came out of nowhere, tackling Cinder to the ground, sending the gun skidding across the pavement. She struggled to push him off, but he was too heavy, pinning her right arm to the ground. She swung a punch at him with her metal fist, heard the bones crunch on impact, but he didn't release her. He snarled and opened his jaws wide. Just as he brought his mouth toward her neck, the ship spun in the air. The landing gear took the soldier in his side, throwing him off Cinder. She rolled away, colliding with Thorn's and Wolf's prone bodies. The ship swept back around, its running lights washing over the street. The ramp scraped against the road as it settled back to the ground, not half a dozen steps from where Cinder lay. Inside the ship, Scarlet Benoit's head appeared in the cockpit's doorway. "Come on!" Clambering to her feet, Cinder grabbed Thorn by the elbow and dragged him off Wolf. But she barely moved when a long howl ricocheted down her spine. It was quickly picked up by the rest of the soldiers, the sound deafening. Cinder stumbled at the base of the ramp and looked back. Two of the soldiers were lying motionless, the two who had taken the brunt of the ship's impact. The rest were crouched down on all fours, their faces turned up to the sky as they howled. The thaumaturge, farther away, picked himself up from the ground with a sneer. Though it was too dark to see any blood, Cinder could tell he was favoring the leg that had been shot. Brushing the sweat from her eyes, Cinder focused on the soldier closest to her. She mentally reached out for the bioelectric waves that were rolling off him, frenzied and hungry, and clamped her thoughts around them. One howl was cut off sharply from the rest. A headache was already forming at her temples from the effort to control him, but she sensed the change immediately. Still violent, still angry, but no longer a wild beast sent to rip apart anyone in his path. "You," she wasn't sure if she said it loud or merely thought it, "you are mine now. Get these two men on board the ship." His eyes flickered, loathing but restrained. "Now." As he moved to lumber toward her, the rest of the howling ceased. Four faces peered at Cinder and the traitor. The thaumaturge snarled, but Cinder could barely see him. Bright spots were dancing in her vision. Her legs were beginning to shake from the effort of keeping herself standing while maintaining her control on the man. He grabbed onto Wolf and Thorn by their wrists and began dragging them up the ramp, a puppet under her strings. But she could already feel the strings fraying, hissing. She fell to one knee. "Impressive." The thaumaturge's voice was muffled in her head. Behind her, her pawn dropped Wolf and Thorn onto the cargo bay floor. "I can see why my queen fears you, but taking control of one of my pets will hardly save you now." She was so close. Get the soldier out of the ship. Get herself inside. She managed to bring him back to the edge, the very bottom of the ramp, before her hold on him snapped. She fell forward, clutching her temples, feeling as if 100 needles were being jabbed into her brain. It hadn't hurt like this to control anyone else, had never hurt at all. The pain began to ease. She squinted. The thaumaturge was snarling at her, one arm clutching his stomach where the ramp had hit him. The rest of the soldiers were just standing there, their eyes still glowing, but their expressions passive, and it occurred to Cinder that the thaumaturge was too hurt to keep control of them all, that even his hold on them was tenuous. But it didn't matter. She had no more strength. She sank back on her heels, letting her hands fall heavy at her sides. Her body swayed. She could feel unconsciousness calling to her, seeping into her brain. A grin once again creased the thaumaturge's lips, but this time it showed more relief than amusement.
Troya, he said, go in and retrieve Mademoiselle Benoit. I will have to decide what is to be done with Alpha.
His eyes darted past Cinder at the same moment she heard a gunshot. The thaumaturge stumbled back, clutching his chest. Slipping onto her hip, Cinder glanced back to see Scarlet marching down the ramp, carrying a shotgun. Mademoiselle Benoit retrieved, she said, planting her heel on the back of the dazed, blank-faced soldier and shoving him off the ramp. And don't worry, we'll take Alpha Kesley off your hands. Sneering, the thaumaturge sank down to the ground. Blood began to dribble out between his fingers.
Where did you get that?
Cinder wheezed.
One of your storage crates, Scarlet said. Come on, let's...
A mix of emotions flickered through her eyes. Writhing fury, startled confusion, emptiness. She lowered the barrel of the gun.
Cinder cursed. Iko, the ramp!
She said, crawling up onto the ramp and collapsing at Scarlet's feet. Reaching up, she snatched the gun away before the thaumaturge could turn it on either of them, and the ramp began to rise, dropping them both down in the cargo bay. An angry scream reached them, and then another chorus of howls that faded quickly away, the thaumaturge's last fading efforts to control his pets. Cinder saw Scarlet shaking her head to rid herself of the fog before hauling herself to her feet.
Hold on to something if you can, Scarlet yelled as she hobbled into the cockpit. Ship, engage magnet lifters and rear thrusters.
Cinder sank exhausted onto the floor, still clutching the gun. Moments later, she felt the ship rising up away from the earth and whipping toward the sky. Chapter 43. Kai was sweating with the effort not to throw up. His eyes stung, but he couldn't look away from the net screen. It was like watching a terrible horror production, too gruesome and fantastical to be real. The vidlink was being transferred from the downtown city square, where the weekly market and the annual festival had been held only days before, the day of his coronation. Bodies littered the square, their spilled blood black beneath the flickering billboards. Most of the corpses were concentrated near the opening of a late-night restaurant, one of the few businesses that had been open and crowded at midnight when the attack had started. He'd been told only one assailant had been in the restaurant at the time, but with the amount of carnage, he felt certain it had to be more. How could one man do so much damage? The feed switched to a hotel in Tokyo just as a man with crazed eyes threw a limp body against a pillar. Kai cringed at the impact and turned away.
Turn it off! I can't watch anymore! Where are the police?
They're doing their best to stop the attacks, Your Majesty, said Torin from behind him. But it takes time to mobilize them and make an organized attempt to fight back. This attack was so unprecedented, so abnormal. These men move fast, rarely stay on a single block for more than a few minutes. Just enough time to kill anyone within reach before moving to another area of the city. Torin trailed off as if he'd heard the panic rising in his own voice and had to stop talking before it overwhelmed him. He cleared his throat. Screen. Show major global feeds. Noise buzzed in the room. Six news anchors reporting the same stories. Sudden attacks. Murderous psychopaths. Monsters. Unknown fatalities. Planet-wide mayhem. Four cities had been struck inside the Commonwealth. New Beijing, Mumbai, Tokyo, and Manila. 10 more had fallen victim across the other 5 earthen countries. Mexico City, New York, Sao Paulo, Cairo, Lagos, London, Moscow, Paris, Istanbul, and Sydney. 14 cities in all. And though it was impossible to gain an exact number on the attackers, witness accounts noted that not more than 20 or 30 men seemed to be behind the attacks at each post. Kai struggled to do the math in his head. 300 men, maybe 400. It seemed impossible as the death toll continued to rise, as the victimized cities began requesting assistance from their neighbors, shipping their injured to other hospitals. As many as 10,000 dead, some were saying, in the course of not 2 hours, and at the hands of only 300 or 400 men, 300 or 400 Lunars, because he knew that Levana was behind this. In two of the attack cities, survivors claimed they had seen a royal thaumaturge in their midst. Though both witnesses had been near delusional with the loss of blood, Kai believed them. It made sense that the queen's most prized minions would be involved in this. It made equal sense that they themselves were removed from the bloodshed, merely orchestrating the attacks through their own pawns. Kai paced away from the screen, rubbing his fingers into his eyes. This was because of him. Levana had done this because of him. Him and Cinder. "This is war," said Queen Camilla of the United Kingdoms. "She's declared war on us." Kai slumped against his desk. They'd all been so silent, entranced by the ongoing footage, that he'd forgotten he was still in a global conference with the other Union leaders. The voice of Africa's Prime Minister Kamen sounded through the speaker, seething. "First 15 years of the plague, and now this. And for what? Levana is upset that a single prisoner got away? A mere girl? No, she's using it as an excuse. She means to make a mockery of us." "I'm having all the major cities evacuated immediately," said President Vargas of America. "We can at least attempt to staunch the bleeding." European Prime Minister Bromstead chimed in. "Before you go that route, I'm afraid I have more unsettling news." Kai's chin fell onto his chest, defeated. He was tempted to cover his ears and not listen. He didn't want to hear any more, but he braced himself instead. "The attack is not only in the major metropolises," said Bromstead. "I've just been informed that in addition to Paris, Moscow, and Istanbul, we've had one small town attacked as well. Rieux, a farming community in southern France. Population 3,800.
3,800? Said Queen Camilla. "Why would she attack such a small town?"
"To confuse us," said Governor-General Williams from Australia. "To make us believe there's no sense to these attacks. To make us afraid that she could strike anywhere, at any time. It is precisely something Levana would do." Chairman Wei burst into Kai's office without knocking. Kai jumped, for a moment thinking that the chairman was a lunatic come to kill him, before his pulse began to subside again. "Any news?" Wei nodded. Kai noticed that his face has aged years in the last week. Lin Cinder had been spotted. Kai swallowed a gasp and shoved himself off the desk.
"What? Who was that speaking?" said Camilla. "What about Lin Cinder?"
"I must tend to other matters," said Kai. "End conference." Sounds of protest were immediately silenced, and Kai focused on the chairman, every nerve humming.
"Well?"
"Three military officers managed to track her using a positive ID on her deceased stepsister, Lin Peony, just like her guardian said we would. We found her in a small town in southern France, minutes before the attack."
"Southern?"
Kai glanced at Torin, just as his advisor shut his eyes, wearied by the same realization.
"Was it a town called Rieux?"
Wei's eyes widened.
"How did you know?"
Kai groaned and rounded to the back of his desk. "Levana's men attacked Rieux, the only non-major city they went after. They must have been able to track her, too. That's why they were there."
"We must alert the other Union leaders," said Torin. "At least we know she isn't attacking at random."
"But how did they find her? Her sister's ID chip was our only lead. How else could she be?" He trailed off, yanking both hands through his hair.
"Of course, she knew about the chip. I'm such an idiot."
"Your Majesty?" He spun around toward Wei, but it was Torin that caught his eye.
"Don't you say this is paranoia. She is listening. I don't know how she does it, but she is spying on us. This very office is probably bugged. That's how she knew about the chip. That's how she knew when my office was open and she could barge in here unannounced. That's how she knew when my father died. Torrin's expression darkened, but for once he made no snide comment about Kai and his ridiculous theories. So we found her then, Cinder? Embarrassment flickered over Wei's brow. I'm sorry, Your Majesty. Once the attack began, she managed to get away in the chaos. We found the ID chip on a farm outside of Ryu, next to signs of a ship's takeoff. We're working on rounding up anyone who might have seen her, but unfortunately, all three officers who first identified her were killed in the attack. Kai began to shake, his entire body burning up from the inside out. He cast furious eyes up to the ceiling, half screaming. Well, see that, Your Majesty? If it wasn't for your attack, we would have had her. I hope you're pleased with yourself. Huffing, he crossed his arms over his chest and waited for his blood pressure to drop again. Enough of this. Call off the search. Your Majesty, said Torrin, I want all available military and enforcement officers focused on finding these men who are attacking us and putting an end to this. That's our new priority. As if relieved by the decision, Hui gave a curt bow and clipped out of the office, leaving the door open in his wake. Your Majesty, said Torrin, while I don't disagree with this course of action, we have to consider how Lavanna will react. We should consider the possibility that this attack, awful as it is only an annoyance compared to what she is truly capable of. Perhaps we should attempt to placate her before she can do any further damage. I know. Kai faced the screen and the muttering, frightened news anchors. I haven't forgotten those pictures that the American Republic had. The memory still sent a chill down his back. Hundreds of soldiers standing in formation, each one a cross between a man and a beast, protruding fangs and enormous claws, hunched shoulders and a fine layer of fur up their broad arms. The men who were attacking all over Earth were vicious and wild and brutal. That much was clear, but they were still only men. Kai suspected they were just the precursor to what Lavanna's beast army would become. And he thought he couldn't loathe her any more, not after she purposely withheld the leptomosis antidote from him, or attacked one of his servants to prove a political point, or forced him to betray Cinder for no other reason than she'd escaped from Luna years ago. But he could not have fathomed this cruelty, which is why he would forever hate himself for what he was about to do. Torrin, will you give me a moment? Your Majesty? Torrin's eyes were wrinkled in the corner, as if carved into his skin. Perhaps they'd all age unfairly this week. You want me to leave? He bit the inside of his lip and nodded. Torrin's lips perched, but it seemed a long time before he could form any words. Kai could see knowledge on his advisor's face. Torrin knew what he was planning. Your Majesty, are you sure you don't wish to discuss this? Let me offer guidance? Let me help you? Kai tried to smile, but it came out nothing more than a painful grimace. I can't stand here, safe in this palace, and not do anything. I can't let her kill anyone else. Not with these monsters, not by withholding leptomosis antidote, not by whatever she has planned next. We both know what she wants. We both know what will stop this. Then let me stay and support you, Your Majesty. He shook his head. This isn't a good choice for the Commonwealth. It may be the only choice, but it will never be a good one. He fidgeted with his collar. The Commonwealth should not be able to blame anyone but me. Please go. He saw Torrin take in a slow, painful breath before bowing deeply. I will be right outside should you need me, Your Majesty. Looking supremely unhappy about it, Torrin left, shutting the door behind him. Kai paced before the net screen, his gut twisting with anxiety. He straightened his shirt, wrinkled from a long day.
but at least he'd still been in his office when the alert had come. He believed he might never experience a full night of sleep again after this, after what he was about to do. In his frenzied thoughts, he couldn't help thinking of Cinder at the ball. How happy he'd been to see her descending the stairs into the ballroom. How innocently amused he'd been at her rain-drenched hair and wrinkled dress, thinking it was a fitting look for the city's most renowned mechanic. He thought she must be immune to society's whims of fashion and decorum, so comfortable in her own skin that she could come to a royal ball at the emperor's own guests with messy hair and oil stains on her gloves, and keep her head high as she did so. That was before he knew that she'd rushed to the ball to give him a warning. Cinder had sacrificed her own safety to plead with him not to accept the alliance, not to marry Lavanna. Because after the marriage ceremony was done, and she had ascended to the throne of the Eastern Commonwealth, Lavanna intended to kill him. He felt sick to his stomach, knowing that Cinder was right. He knew that Lavanna wouldn't hesitate to dispose of him as soon as he'd served his purpose. But he had to stop these murders. He had to stop this war. Cinder was not the only one capable of sacrificing herself for something greater. Inhaling, exhaling, he faced the screen. Establish vidlink to Queen Lavanna of Lunar. The small globe in the corner turned over only once before brightened with the image of the Lunar Queen draped in her lacy white veil. He imagined her face old and haggard and decrepit beneath its sheath, and it didn't help. Kai sensed she had been waiting for his calm. He sensed she'd been listening in on everything and already knew precisely what his intentions were. He sensed she was smirking behind the veil.
"My dear Emperor Kaido, what a pleasant surprise. It must be quite late in New Beijing, about 2 hours and 24 minutes past midnight. Is that correct?"
He swallowed his disgust as best he could and opened his hands wide to her. "Your Majesty, I beg you, please stop this attack. Please call off your soldiers." The veil shifted as she lifted her head to the side.
"You beg me? How delightful. Do go on."
Heat flooded his face. "Innocent people are dying. Women and children. Bystanders. People who haven't done anything to you. You've won, and you know it. So please, end it now."
"You say I've won. But where is my prize, young emperor? Have you captured the cyborg girl who started all this? She is the one you should be appealing to. If she turns herself over to me, then I will call off my men. That is the offer. Do let me know when you are prepared to bargain with me. Until then, good night."
"Wait." She folded her hands.
"Yes?"
His pulse thrummed painfully against his temples. "I can't give you the girl. We thought we had her, but she's gotten away again, as I suspect you already know. But I can't let you continue to murder innocent earthens while we try and find another way to track her."
"I'm afraid that's not my problem, Your Majesty." "There's something else you want, something I can offer. We both know what that is."
"I'm sure I don't know what you speak of." Kai didn't realize he was gripping his hands, practically pleading with her, until his knuckles started to ache.
"If your offer of a marriage alliance still stands, I accept. Your prize for calling off your men will be the Commonwealth."
His voice broke on the final word, and he clamped his jaw shut. He waited, breathless, knowing that every second that passed meant more bloodshed on the streets of Earth. After an agonizing silence, Lavanna tittered.
"My dear Emperor, how could I resist such a charming proposal?"
Chapter 44. As the ship entered neutral orbit, Scarlet released the air from her burning lungs and slumped into the pilot's seat. Moaning, all the aches and wounds catching up to her at once, she turned herself around to face the ship's bay. Lynn Cinder was sitting on the floor with her legs splayed out before her. Wolf, unconscious, was spread eagle on his back. A streak of blood followed him from the ramp where he'd been dragged. The other man was flopped onto his stomach.
"You're a pilot," said Cinder.
"Lynn Cinder, Princess Selene.
My grandma taught me she was a pilot in..."
The words evaporated, her heart aching.
"But your ship does pretty well on its own."
"So glad to be of service," said the disembodied voice.
"I'm Eco. Is anyone hurt?"
"Everyone's hurt," said Cinder, groaning. Scarlet hobbled over to Wolf's body and sank down beside him.
"Are they going to be all right?"
"I hope so," said Cinder, "but I've never stuck around long enough to see the after effects of these darts." Scarlet unzipped her shredded hoodie and tied it over the open wound on Wolf's arm.
"You said you had bandages?"
She could see Cinder's dread at being forced into action again, but soon Cinder pushed herself up and disappeared through a door on the far side of the cargo bay. A low moan drew her attention to the stranger. He rolled onto his back, cringing.
"Where are we?"
he muttered.
"Oh, you're awake already,"
said Cinder, returning with salve and gauze.
"I was hoping you'd stay knocked out a while longer." Peace and quiet was a pleasant change.
Despite her tone, Scarlet could sense the relief rolling off the girl as she dropped a tube of salve onto the man's stomach. She passed the gauze to Scarlet along with another tube of salve and a scalpel. "We need to cut out your ID chips and destroy them before they track you." Easing to a seated position, the man gave Scarlet a hazy, suspicious look, and she thought for a moment he'd forgotten where she'd come from before his attention dropped down to Wolf.
"Managed to get the loon on board, huh? Maybe I can find a cage for him in one of these bins. I hate for him to kill us in our sleep after all."
Scarlet scowled, unraveling a strip of gauze.
"He's not an animal," she said, focusing on the claw marks on the sides of Wolf's face.
"Are you sure?"
"I hate to agree with Thorn," said Finger.
"I mean, I really hate to agree with him, but he's right. We don't know that he's on our side." Scarlet pressed her lips and pulled out another strip of tape.
"You'll see when he wakes up. He's not..."
She hesitated and realized a moment later she couldn't even convince herself that he was on their side.
"Well," said the man, "I feel much better."
Tearing a hole in his pants, he dabbed the ointment on the puncture wound from the tranquilizer. Pulling her hair out of her face, Scarlet ripped open Wolf's shirt and slathered the medical salve onto the deep gashes across his abdomen.
"Who are you?"
"Captain Carswell Thorne." Recapping the salve, he propped himself against the cargo bay's wall. His hand landed on the shotgun.
"Where did this come from?"
"Scarlet found it in one of the crates," said Cinder, facing the net screen on the wall.
"Screen on."
The screen showed a shaking image of a bloodied man running full speed toward the camera. There was screaming and then static. A male anchorman behind a desk replaced the video, his face pale.
"This is footage fed to us from the attacks in Manhattan earlier tonight, and sources have confirmed that more than a dozen cities across the Union are also under siege."
Scarlet bent over to cut the ID chip from Wolf's wrist. She noticed he already had a scar there, as though it hadn't been very long ago when the ID chip had been put in him to begin with. The anchorman continued, "Citizens are urged to stay in their homes and lock all doors and windows. We are now going to a live feed from Capital City, where President Vargas will be making an address." A groan drew everyone's attention to Wolf. From the corner of her eye, Scarlet saw Captain Thorne cock the gun and level the barrel at Wolf's chest. Scarlet set aside the scalpel and both their ID chips and tilted Wolf's face toward her.
"Are you all right?"
He lifted blurry eyes to her before suddenly wrenching away and rolling onto his side, vomiting onto the ship's floor. Scarlet winced.
"Sorry," said Cinder. "That's probably a side effect of the drugs."
Thorne gagged.
"Aces, I'm glad that didn't happen to me. How embarrassing."
Swiping at his lips, Wolf collapsed again onto his back, cringing with every movement. He furrowed his brow, then squinted up at Scarlet. His eyes had returned to their normal vibrant green.
no longer filled with animal hunger.
You're alive.
She tucked a curl behind her ear, baffled at her own relief.
This was the man who had handed her over to those monsters. She should have hated him, but all she could think of was his desperation when he kissed her on the train, when he begged her not to go looking for her grandmother.
Thanks to you.
Thorn scoffed.
Thanks to him.
Wolf tried to look at Thorn, but he couldn't twist his neck enough.
Where are we?
You're aboard a cargo ship orbiting Earth, said Cinder.
Sorry about the whole tranquilizing thing. I thought you were going to eat her.
I thought I was, too. His expression darkened as he took in Cinder's metal hand. I think my queen is looking for you.
Thorn quirked an eyebrow.
Was that supposed to make me feel better about having him on board?
He's better now, Scarlet said.
Aren't you?
He shook his head.
You shouldn't have brought me here. I'll only put you all in danger. You should have left me down there. You should have killed me.
Thorn released the safety on the gun.
Don't be ridiculous, said Scarlet. They did this to you. It's not your fault.
Scarlet eyed her like he was speaking to a stubborn child.
Scarlet, if anything happened to you because of me...
Do you intend to harm anyone aboard this ship or not? Said Cinder, cutting through their conversation.
Wolf blinked at her, at Thorn, then at Scarlet, his eyes lingering.
No, he whispered. 3 heartbeats later, Cinder's body relaxed.
He's telling the truth.
What? Said Thorn. And that's supposed to make me feel better?
Kai is going to make an announcement.
Iko's voice blared through the ship. Then the volume of the net screen rose. An anchor was speaking again.
Appears that all attacks have ceased. We will keep you posted as news develops. Now we connect you to the feed from the Eastern Commonwealth, where we are expecting an emergency announcement from Emperor Kaido to begin. He was cut off, the screen turning to the EC's press room, where Kai stood behind a podium. Cinder punched the material of her pants in both fists.
Cinder has a bit of a crush on him, Thorn Stage whispered.
Don't we all? Said Iko.
Kai seemed momentarily disconcerted beneath the bright lights, but it passed as he squared his shoulders.
You all know why I have called this press conference in the middle of the night, and I thank you for coming on such short notice. I hope to answer some of the questions that have been posed since these attacks happened nearly 3.5 hours ago.
Wolf hissed in pain as he sat up to see better. Scarlet's fingers tightened around his hand.
I can confirm that these men are from Luna. Some of our scientists have already begun conducting tests on the body of one of these men, killed by a police officer in Tokyo, and have confirmed that they are genetically engineered soldiers. They appear to be lunar males whose physical makeup have been combined with the neural circuitry of some sort of wolf hybrid. It seems clear that their surprise attack was orchestrated in a way to ensure terror, confusion, and chaos throughout Earth's major cities. In this, I feel it is safe to say they have succeeded. Many of you are aware that Queen Lavanna has been threatening to declare war on Earth for nearly her entire rule. If you are wondering why Queen Lavanna chose now to initiate this attack after so many years of threats, it's because of me.